Welcome to the 411 Ground and Pound Radio Show, your weekly look into the wide, wacky, wonderful world of mixed martial arts. A little bit misty, little bit nostalgic tonight. I'm Robert Winfrey, I'm your host. This is the last 411 Ground and Pound show of the year. Not ever, of the year. We'll be back next week, I promise. But this is our last show of 2015. I hope everyone out there listening to this had fun, safe, happy holidays, however you choose to celebrate, whatever denomination you happen to be. Hope you were all, you know, safe, enjoyable, avoided all of the stereotypical negative things or just, you know, bad luck, because that happens too. All right, tonight, relatively straightforward, we're just previewing UFC 195 because the UFC wants to get 2016 going as early as possible. In this case, it means January 2nd. UFC 195, which has had some shuffling. There's an interesting history to that card we're going to talk a little bit about, but we're going to be previewing that. And I think that's about it. We might share some favorite memories, but we don't want to give away too much of the 411 year-end awards, which are currently being voted, discussed, and tabulated, and will be appearing in the near future in the MMA Zone of 411 Mania, so I'll try not to give away too many of those. But if you'd like to call in and share your thoughts on the upcoming UFC 195, if you've thoughts about the year in review, just anything related to the sport, we take live callers here. The number to do so is 323-657-0901. Once again, 323-657-0901. If you want to call in using Skype, there is a Skype icon on the Blog Talk Radio player page. It's on the top of the player, pretty much centered. Click it. There's three or four boxes of dialogue you're going to have to click through, so be prepared for that. But then you'll show up on my switchboard. I'll get you on the air. All right. Here with me to bid adieu to 2015 is the 411 jack of all trades, my regular partner in crime here, Jeff Harris, is with us again. Jeff, how you doing this evening?
Come down to the coast, have a few laughs. It's a little holiday John McClane for everyone there, saluting the greatest Christmas film of all time, Die Hard.
I would agree with your assessment. Greatest Christmas movie ever, and I don't think it's all that close. All right, into UFC 195. Now, Jeff, I've joked leading up to this fight, and it's only half a joke. If there was ever a fight where someone was going to die in the cage, it's this one. It's the main event, UFC 195, because Robbie Lawler is going to fight Carlos Condit. There's a glorious level of implied violence in that fight, the likes of which the UFC has not seen recently, because Robbie Lawler tries to take your head off. Carlos Condit does the same thing. Both these guys are violent fighters. Before breaking it down technically, I'm kind of psyched for this fight. I don't get, you know, too excited about fights all that often given the volume of MMA I consume. But I'm excited for this one. I am certainly looking forward to these two guys attempting to kill each other in the octagon.
This matchup is a welterweight dream matchup. And, I mean, I think for that alone, that's why I think Condit was basically fast-tracked into this title situation here after, you know, coming off a lengthy layoff due to his injury and then just annihilating Thiago Alves. You have two of the most violent strikers possibly in welterweight history, possibly in UFC history going up against one another. It's a very interesting matchup. Condit is maybe a little more technical with his strikes. Lawler might have a bit of a better chin, a bit more raw knockout power. He might be a little bit more well-rounded. Condit has always had problems with his takedown defense and his wrestling against opponents. That's something Lawler, I think, should maybe consider exploiting. Condit's got dangerous. He's got knockout power, dangerous kickboxing, very dangerous kicks. I mean, let's just look at the facts. At one point, Condit had knockouts in a row against Rory McDonald, Dan Hardy, and Dong Young Kim. And then that culminated with the win over Nick Diaz to capture the interim title. He was unsuccessful against George St. Pierre in his bid for the UFC welterweight title, but that was a very tough fight. That was a very tough and close fight. He put in a strong performance against Johnny Hendricks, but once again, you know, the wrestling and takedowns lost him the fight on the scorecards, on points. He eventually rematched with Martin Kamen, which was his first fight in the UFC, which he lost by a close split decision, won the fight via an impressive knockout. Then he had the loss to Tyron Woodley. Now he's finally, you know, he's back. He's fighting for the title. This is a crucial fight for Condit. This is really, he might never get another UFC title opportunity like this again. So it might not be do or die in the long run, but I think in his mind it should be.
Well, in terms of title aspirations, it certainly has. There aren't that many guys who get three shots at UFC gold. Now, say what you will about the interim belt, and I maintain it wasn't necessary, but it was a shot at a UFC title. He then got to fight GSP for the belt, came up short. This is his third opportunity at a UFC title. At the very least, it's his second at the real belt. And again, interim, take it how you will. If he loses this, there's not too many guys who go 0-2 in title shots and get a third.
Well, you have to think about, like, the age and the time you put into the sport. Condit has, I think, close to 40 fights. He's 31 years old, so he's by no means an old man, but he is technically old in the sport, and he's been fighting for almost 14 years. So this is sort of a point where some fighters start to slow down and start to, their careers start winding down. Condit isn't necessarily at that point yet, but it could start happening to him, you know, in the next two, three, maybe 4 to 5 years. It's not that he's old. It's just that he's had a lot of fights. He's been in plenty of his own wars. And I'm not saying we're going to see that here, but he could be at a point very soon where we start seeing him slow down. He's sort of at a similar age to Jim Miller right now. And Jim Miller, you know, I think we're starting to see a guy, you know, who's fought for quite a while and been through a lot of wars in the UFC, and he's not quite as sharp as he used to be. Hasn't really looked like he's slowed down a bit, even though, I mean, he's had losses against tough opponents, and he mainly lost those fights due to takedowns and wrestling. So I just think it's interesting to look at those factors going in.
Yeah, it's something that you absolutely have to consider when you're talking about Carlos Condit at this stage. Not just age, and again, when your fighting prime dies around 30. By the time you're 32, your body from almost any athletic standpoint starts, you know, going to hell. Not that you can't compete after that point, but depending on the sport, that's kind of a tipping point for a lot of athletes.
Yeah, those prime years in combat sports, those prime years, it's really like 25 to 32, right?
Yeah, that's about. If I had to guess, I'd say it's something like 26 to 31 is, you know, kind of the true prime.
Right. And of course, you know, there are plenty of exceptions, but that's sort of the
it's
average.
It's a general rule. It's not written in stone, because again, there are guys who compete very successfully on either side of those numbers, but.
Right.
It's a general rule. That's when your body is finally matured. That's generally when you've got experience to back up the physical maturity. And everything's just kind of in the sweet spot to really compete at your best.
Right.
I really like this fight. This is going to be an interesting kind of clash, because both these guys, neither is known for their defense. Neither guy's afraid to get hit. They both, again, they do get hit a lot, but neither has shown a propensity for being knocked out. Condit has a slight edge in terms of striking diversity. He will utilize knees and elbows a lot more than Robbie Lawler will. But Lawler hits harder. Lawler has harder kicks. I don't think he uses them as frequently as Condit does, but there's something to consider. I'm going to be interested to see who goes for the first takedown in this fight, because either guy could try. I mean, taking Robbie Lawler down at this point in his career is not easy, but it can be done. I'm not sure Carlos Condit can do it, but if he needs to mix things up, it's worth considering. Ditto for Lawler, though taking Condit down is much easier.
I mean, no one could knock out Condit before. I mean, the only knockout loss on his record is due to a knee injury in the fight with Tyron Woodley. He's never been like legitimately knocked out before, and he's been in there with some headhunters and some killers.
I can't even remember him ever being rocked. I mean, just thinking about it, I mean, it might have happened, and it's just escaping my memory, but I honestly can't even remember him getting hit really hard and just being, you know, wobbly.
I'd have to go back, maybe in the Kampman fight, maybe in the Ellenberger, but I mean, Roy was really just out-grappling him and really just beating him up there. Hardy never really got anything off on him at all. Kim only was able to take him down, and Diaz was able, I think, to be competitive with him, but I don't think he ever really stunned or really tagged Condit. So it's very, I mean, again, this is a really compelling matchup just from every angle. So I'm really curious to see how this fight pans out.
If I had to guess about which position is going to be most important in this fight, there's two that I think need to be considered. One is the clinch, because if you let Condit dictate the clinch, he has no problem utilizing knees and elbows and short hooks to kind of just, you know, make your life miserable in that space. It's a little bit different when you get into when he's not allowed to dictate the clinch and you've got someone like Johnny Hendricks or George St. Pierre who can really smother him and utilize that to get takedowns. But if you're just fighting in close proximity with him, he's going to hurt you.
Well, the other thing you have to consider, Robert, is that Condit is really good at fighting at distance and fighting at range. Look at how he fought Nick Diaz in their fight. And he will have a slight height and reach advantage over Lawler. Not huge, but he has about, I think, 3 inches of height and about 2 inches of reach. And Condit can fight you close up, and he can fight you at distance.
Yeah, I've gone back and forth on this a little bit. When it comes to actually predicting, I honestly can't find much of a reason to pick against Robbie Lawler right now. He has shored up all the holes in his game that used to be there. He's got a killer mentality. He was down in that fight with Roy McDonald, and it never stopped him. He kept coming, got a late finish. He got, you know, rocked and beat up. Both those guys got smashed in that fight.
He was really
and
down
he
against
never
Hendricks.
Quit.
Against Hendricks, too, in their rematch. He was down. He was really down on that fight.
Came on really strong in rounds 4 and 5 in that one. And it was those two rounds that won him the fight, really. I can't pick against Robbie Lawler right now. And much as part of me is going to be rooting for Carlos Condit because I'm kind of a fan. Robbie Lawler right now is really dialed in. He's got everything kind of working for him. And
I agree with you, Robert. I'm also feeling Lawler right now just because of those recent performances. But, I mean, I think we'll also see just how much that war with Rory McDonald took a toll on him in that last fight. Because that was a bloody, bloody bloodbath. And I'm back and forth on this one. I could see this going any number of ways. While I'm leaning toward Lawler, I could easily just see ways Condit could win. Just from a technical standpoint, from a power standpoint, if they just stand and exchange strikes, I could see ways Condit wins this fight. But I'm I'm feeling Lawler just because of the run he's had lately and just how much better he's been since he returned to the UFC. He's been a stud at welterweight. Just, you know, after a sort of a mediocre run as a middleweight in Strikeforce and sort of going up and down, he's been terrific as a welterweight. And that's sort of why I'm feeling it'll be Lawler here, but I definitely see ways that Condit could come out on top here. I think it's just one of those type of matchups. So if we come back and Condit is the champion next week, to me it wouldn't be a huge surprise.
It wouldn't be the biggest shock in the world. I mean, Condit has tools to pull this off. But, man, Robbie Lawler just looks like a monster right now.
How big this fight can do? I mean, coming off of 193, 194, which both probably did either close to or over a million buys. Meltzer is saying 193 did over 1.1 million pay-per-view buys. It's very likely that 194 did even more. What do you think is the ceiling for this card?
This card suffers from a lack of casual fan appeal, which is what Rousey and McGregor, who headlined 193 and 194, had going for them. This appeals very much to, you know,
hardcore
fans of
fans,
MMA.
Right?
Yeah,
like pure,
not
like,
just
this is more
hardcore
like a
fan.
Yeah.
I will be surprised if this thing does north of 700,000 buys. I think right around 500 to maybe 600 is probably the zone we're going to fall in for this. Because, and we're going to talk about this a little bit. While this is a fine card outside of the main event, there's nothing outside of the main event that would draw a casual fan into this.
Right.
And when
I'm
you're
thinking,
talking about big pay-per-view numbers, you need
right.
the casual audience.
I'm thinking, you know, I'm thinking more in the range of 300,000 to 450. I don't think it would get much more than that. Condit, you know, this is an out. And this is an outstanding welterweight title fight. It definitely, you know, this is a huge, intriguing title fight. But, you know, Lawler and Condit are really more middle-of-the-road pay-per-view draws, so I don't really see them, like, I think that it'll definitely do well over, like, 250K, but, like, not much more than, like, 450K, which wouldn't be too bad for a card like this, to be honest.
Especially, no, as long as they don't do less than, like, 300.
Yeah.
Or probably less than 350. They'll be, I imagine they'll consider that a successful event because.
I mean, pay-per-view business is weird now, and it's not quite what it used to be for the UFC. And, like, you know, they had those two big mega events, but, and this isn't anywhere near as big, but at least it's anchored by a big title fight.
Yeah. And it'll. I think it'll do better than maybe it would have because under normal circumstances because they did a good job on both 193 and 194 promoting this event. So all the casual fans who saw those two events did get, you know, the previews for this one to know it was upcoming. So it'll do better than, you know, again, without that promotional push, but we're not talking gangbusters for this one.
Yeah, I agree.
And if you want to know why, now, I don't want to come across as down on this card, because I'm not. There's some good fights on this card, a couple that I'm really looking forward to. But there's nothing else apart from the main event that really kind of screams, you know, take my money. This is almost one of those events where, I mean, knock on wood here, but if something happens in the next week to Lawler or Condit, I'm not sure what you can do in the main event of this card to keep it salvageable. Because a co-main event to main event, boy howdy. My estimation of buys drops steeply to, you know, forgive the joke, but Demetrius Johnson territory. And I love DJ, but the man doesn't draw. Our co-main event is a heavyweight fight, which, boy, is that very rarely good. This is actually a heavyweight fight that matters, which is a rarity. Stipe Miocic, who is on a really good run, He's coming off of a TKO win over Mark Hunt. He lost to Junior Dos Santos before that, but that was a competitive fight and a fight that started, you know, that really kind of signified how far Dos Santos had started to fall. But he had won three in a row before that. Just on, hey, his overall UFC record is what, 3-6? He's 7-2 in the UFC. I mean, that's nothing to sneeze at. He's fighting Andre Arlovsky. Arlovsky, who, man, somehow, I mean, beyond what I thought possible, completely turned his career around. He's on a 4-fight winning streak in the UFC, 6 in a row overall. His only loss since February of 2011 is to Anthony Johnson. Coming off of a win over Frank Mir, that was a bad fight. But before that, he had maybe the round of the year against Travis Brown at UFC 187. This is a heavyweight fight that makes sense. The winner is, I'm not sure if they'll actually be the next title contender. There's a few things up in the air still, but there's a good chance they are. They're, at the very least, they're high up in the discussion.
You can make a legitimate argument that this could be a title eliminator fight.
Yeah.
Now that Junior Dos Santos has lost to Overeem.
Yeah, unless Overeem, you know, wants a title shot as part of his new contract type thing. I mean, again, there's still a few things in the air, but
there are mitigating factors here.
But the winner here is in a darn good spot, and man, if this were 5 rounds, I would pick Stipe Miocic without too much trouble. I don't
think
Arlovsky has the gas tank for 5 rounds at this stage of his career. Which is not a knock on him. A lot of heavyweights in their prime don't have a gas tank for 5 rounds. But Miocic has proven that he does. Miocic can be hit. He can be rocked. Arlovsky does hit hard. But I think one of the things that, you know, gets forgotten with Miocic is his wrestling ability. Because he's got some skills on the mat.
He's a fairly good boxer, too. Miocic is well-rounded. I mean, he's like one of those rare types. He's a Golden Gloves boxer, and he's a Division I wrestler. So, I mean, he has all that going for him. And he has used technical boxing and footwork very well against some of his opponents. His problem is that, you know, when he's fighting other heavyweights, he has trouble letting his hands go, and he just doesn't have that pure one-shot knockout power. I think one of his only recent knockouts, it was against Fabio Maldonado, and that was, that guy's a light heavyweight, could possibly be a middleweight. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I mean, he stopped Mark Hunt with strikes, but that was, you know, 4.5 rounds of a beating. It wasn't a one-shot deal.
This isn't a 5-round fight. Still, I'm leaning toward Miocic here just because I think he's a little more well-rounded and technical than Arlovsky. I think Arlovsky is going to just try and take his head off and go for those power shots. I think Miocic poses just more problems to Arlovsky than Frank Mir does. I think he can get Arlovsky to the mat and maybe just dominate him from there.
Yeah, I'm going with Miocic as well. It's tough because Arlovsky's had like the best feel-good story in all of MMA, I think, excepting maybe Robbie Lawler over the last few years. But this is a combination of a pressure fighter, and Miocic may not have one-punch knockout power, but he can still hit pretty hard.
Yeah.
Arlovsky's chin is still, he's learned how to, you know, kind of work around it a little bit. And he's certainly fighting a style that prevents his, I don't want to say he's got a weak, you know, weak chin is not accurate because he's eaten some shots, but it's a liability that he has simply learned to fight around at this point. But he can still be hit. He can be hit by more technical fighters. And you combine that with the pressure that Miocic likes to apply to his opponents. I got Miocic. But, you know, if I'm going to be excited tentatively about a heavyweight fight, this is not a bad one to be excited for.
But here's my point on Miocic. If he wants a heavyweight title shot and he feels he's been wronged in not getting a title shot after one win over Mark Hunt, he's got to make a statement here. He's got to not just beat Arlovsky, but it has to be like a stunning, impressive win, because now suddenly Overeem is sitting pretty and people are talking about him fighting for the title again. I mean, ideally, I don't want to see Overeem fight for the title, but it's very possible now that he's got that knockout win over Junior Dos Santos, who Stipe
could
not... Well,
if memory serves, isn't Overeem the last guy that actually beat Werdum?
Overeem beat Werdum by a split decision.
Yeah, but I think he was the last guy that beat Werdum.
The last guy to finish him, I think, is what I would... So...
I got to look that up now.
Miocic lost to Junior. It was a close fight. It was a tough fight, but he lost that fight. So he beats Arlovsky here. I mean, not just beats him, like not just scrapes by a decision, but he actually beats Arlovsky up. He's really in a great spot right now, and then he can start making his title shot demands. One TKO win over Mark Hunt is not enough to earn a title shot, especially after that loss to Junior. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, oh, yeah. Fabricio Werdum has won 6 fights in a row. His last loss was to Overeem. Overeem
right.
was the last guy that beat him.
But Junior was the last guy to finish him, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Werdum also lost to Andrei Arlovsky at UFC 70. I forgot about
that. To me, that was just Werdum was not. I don't think he fought a smart fight against Overeem. He was not in good shape for that fight either.
Oh, and he is not at all the same fighter he was then. I mean, he was still flopping around like a trout on the ground trying to get Overeem down there with him. Now he's knocking guys out.
He fought a dumb fight against Overeem, and I think if he had just started doing what he started doing in the third round and maybe the second or first, he probably would have won that fight against Overeem.
Yeah, that fight sucked.
It did.
That was a terrible, terrible fight, but it was a heavyweight fight. It's kind of to be expected. All right, next up, and you're going to see a couple of names you might recognize throughout the rest of these fights, but you know, we're pretty much done when it comes to, you know, top-tier fighters on this card now. But I'm actually really looking forward to this next fight, and I'll explain why if you've never heard me talk about one of these gentlemen before. But Albert Tumanov is fighting Lorenz Larkin. Anyone who's heard me talk about Albert Tumanov on this show knows I have a deep respect and admiration for that man's skills as a fighter, because his technical striking for the welterweight division is superb. Again, he has a professional boxing background, but he has integrated kicks with that very well. He's got a head kick knockout over a guy who's 6'4". And Tumanov stands, I believe, 5'11". That's some pretty crazy leg dexterity. He's on a 4-fight winning streak?
Yeah, 4-1 in the UFC overall.
And that loss to Ildemar Alcantara, it was a split decision, and I seem to recall it being a tad cluckified. I'd have to rewatch the fight. But that was not a gimme by any stretch of the imagination. And Ildemar Alcantara is, he may not be, you know, a top 5 welterweight in the world, but that guy's no pushover. And getting him as your UFC debut to come in and perform like he did was very impressive. He's coming off of a win over Alan Joban. Lorenz Larkin has reinvigorated his career. He came into the UFC, lost. He won his first 2 in the UFC, then lost his next 3. Just wasn't cutting it as a middleweight. Dropped to welterweight and has knocked out his last 2 opponents. These 2 guys are strikers. That is Not to say they can't do other stuff in the cage, but that's their bread and butter. And I've yet to see a fight where someone forced either Lorenz Larkin or Albert Tumanov into such a disadvantageous position striking that they tried for takedowns. Not saying it can't happen, not saying if, you know, this fight, if one of them has dominance in on the ground in this fight, that they're not going to be able to exploit it. But plan A with these guys is always to strike. Again, as a fan of technical striking, I like, you know, Larkin might be a bit flashier, but he's, there's some solid technique behind what he does. I don't like his chances against a guy like Albert Tumanov. A flashy striker like Larkin will more often than not lose to an intelligent, well-prepared, calculated technical striker like Tumanov. I think Tumanov takes a decision. Wouldn't surprise me to see him stop him. He's got that kind of power. He knows how to mix up his strikes. Larkin can win. The guy hits hard. He kicks hard. These two are going to throw down. But I'm a big believer in proper technique, intelligent application of technique in the cage over flashy and powerful. It's one of the reasons I can't. Yeah, not to say these guys can't win, but I'm very hesitant to pick guys who rely on that. Guys like Uriah Hall, guys like Lorenz Larkin. I'm more inclined to pick a consistent, thoughtful, technical fighter. For example, Robert Whittaker. Or in this case, Albert Tumanov. I think Tumanov is going to get the win. I think 2015 could be a pretty big year for Tumanov. He had a good last year, and if he can capitalize on that, he's only 23. This is a guy who there's a real chance he turns out being someone important to the future of that division. All right, Jeff, I know you're not, you don't have quite the same level of fanboyism that I do here. But I know you like this
fight a lot, Winfrey. I was at UFC 192, and I had the pleasure of seeing Alan Jobim versus Albert Tumanov live, and that was an unbelievable performance by Tumanov, who just took Jobim apart. And Jobim was probably the favorite guy. He was the prospect getting all the hype going into that fight, and Tumanov just did not care at all. Both of these guys are not ranked, but both of them I could say are easily – they could easily be like in that fringe top 15 group for the welterweight rankings. And the winner of this fight, you know, when you look at like Tarek Saffiedine, you know, who went 1-1 this year, you know, you can maybe start thinking of moving some of these guys down and maybe moving a guy like the winner of this fight, Tumanov or Larkin, into the rankings after this fight. Definitely, I think Tumanov, if he can keep this win streak going. Larkin has been looking very good since he moved down. He surprised me a great deal. I just wonder if he'll be okay handling this weight cut now that, you know, they're taking the IVs away. I just like Tumanov's skill set, the way he mixes everything up, the way he mixes everything together. He's got scary knockout power. Three of his last four wins have come by knockout due to strikes, so I'm leaning toward Tumanov here. I think he's going to pick up the win.
Yeah, again, I'm a pretty big fan of Tumanov and his abilities.
He's just another one of those scary Russians, man. Some of these, you know, these Russians, they're well-rounded and they're scary, man. All they do is train in the winter like Rocky Balboa and fight bears. That's all they do. They drink vodka for breakfast.
All right. Next up at featherweight, we've got, this fight, I don't know about this one. Diego Brandão is fighting, and I'm not a fan of Diego Brandão's. That's long been established. He's missed weight, I want to say, twice. I would have to double check that at least once. He's on a two-fight winning streak. That Hedis fight, yeah, that was fair. I think it was Hedis had an eye swollen so badly he couldn't see out of it. And you can't see, you can't fight. Katsunori Kakuno was kind of a gimme. He's fighting Brian Ortega. Brian Ortega is completely and utterly unheralded. There's a couple of reasons for that. One, his UFC debut was technically a win over Mike De La Torre, and Mike De La Torre is no joke, guys. If you haven't seen what that guy's been doing lately, he's good. But he failed a drug test for a steroid. I forget whether or not dristanolone is an anabolic or has some other use. Rebounded by stopping Thiago Tavares with punches in June. This is, if I had to guess, going to be one of those just kind of wild, scrappy brawls. Neither guy is a very technical striker. Brandel will probably have an edge in jiu-jitsu. Ortega's no slouch on the ground, but Brandel has some pretty impressive submission skills when he actually bothers to put them to use. I don't know. I go back and forth on this one. I think I'm going to go with Brandel. Just, he's got some experience. And Brian Ortega, young, certainly promising, but he doesn't have, he's not fought anyone quite like Brandel. He doesn't have the same level of experience. And that's something you get through, you can't fake it. You can't cheat it at times. So I'll go with Brandel, but this fight could be fun if you enjoy just, kind of wild, sloppy brawls. And there's certainly a place for those types of fights.
I'm leaning toward Brandao here, but this is just, I think, one of those middle-of-the-road sort of featherweight fights. I think it's a decent fight. We could see we could very likely see a finish here. I wouldn't say it's questionable being on the main card, but I think there were certainly a couple fights I would have maybe put on the main card instead. But it's fine, and I think Brandao will pick up the win via knockout.
All right, and kicking off the main card, we have, this is kind of a gimme for Abel Trujillo, who, he may never be top shelf lightweight material because it's lightweight, but man, this guy always comes to fight and he wants to take your head off. He's on a 2-fight losing streak at the moment. He was submitted by Tony Ferguson and Gleison Tibau. We're still having to wait to see what the story winds up being with the Tibau fight.
He was doping.
It has not officially been altered to a no contest as of this point. Again, there's procedures they're going through, but Tibau did have some drug issues apparently, and there's a lot being sorted out there. I imagine that will be changed in the very near future. But he's fighting Tony Sims, and I think
one in the UFC.
Yeah.
He was he lost the decision in his last fight to Oliveira Mercier. He won his UFC debut against Steve Montgomery by knockout. So, just on paper, I'm sort of leaning toward Trujillo, provided, he's ready to go and he's prepared in that last fight, where he lost to Tibau, didn't take a lot out of him, which he was fighting a guy who was cheating. So, you can give him that. And the fight with Tibau did end quickly, so it wasn't like he took a sustained beating over the course of three rounds, and that was also his first fight in almost a year too.
Yeah, I've got Trujillo probably by violent knockout, but it's an odd choice to open up a pay-per-view in terms of name value, but these two guys are gonna swing, and if you're willing to swing with Abel Trujillo, you're probably gonna lose. Not guaranteed, but generally speaking, that's not a guy you want to trade with. I got Trujillo probably in the first round, actually, via knockout. All right, on the preliminary card, Michael McDonald is returning. Remember him? It's all thought he was going to be something. Hasn't fought in over 2 years. But here's the thing about that. Normally, that's a big, being out for that long is a big deal. Michael McDonald entered the UFC before he was 21. He is what, 24? 24. And that's after over a year off. All right, this is not someone, again, he had some injuries, but when you're that young, taking time off to both heal injuries and drill technique, that's not the same as, you know, when you get later on in your career. He's coming off a loss to Faber.
He made his WEC debut 5 years ago. So think about that.
Yeah, it's crazy. His only losses in the UFC are to Henan Barão and Uriah Faber. You know, those two guys aren't scrubs. He's fighting Masanori Kanahara, who, coming off of a split decision loss to Rani Yahya, can't remember if I scored that fight for Yahya. I thought Kanahara won that fight, if memory serves. I did, because Yahya got a whole round for doing nothing but holding onto a leg, theoretically looking for a single leg. Yeah, that was cluckied. That was a clucky decision.
He did get a dominant win over Alex Caceres at Hunt versus Nelson in Japan.
He has a loss in deep for throwing a fighter out of the ring. I just looked that up. That's hilarious. I got McDonald here. He's a very well-rounded fighter. He's got power, but he tended, again, there's going to have been improvements. He tended to lean on the uppercut a lot in his previous UFC fights. We'll see if he's gotten out of some of that predictability, added a few new wrinkles to his game. He's not bad off of his back. Not afraid to, you know, utilize an active offensive guard, which is something you don't see a whole lot of. I got McDonald making a successful return, but that's using previous information and quite a few assumptions. Kanahara winning would not be the craziest thing in the world.
This is pretty much a welcome back tune-up fight for McDonald, but we'll see. I mean, he hasn't fought in quite a while. You know, there'll be issues with ring rust, with, you know, the mental game. His last fight was a loss, and he hasn't fought in a long time, so we'll see. But I'm not really betting on or expecting that, and I think McDonald, I mean, with his skill set, I think he should be fairly able to dominate Kanahara. So I think
now, there's also the weight cut issue. I mean, McDonald was a young kid making bantamweight. If his body has matured, and that's another factor. He might wind up having to move up. I mean, a huge bantamweight, but
we'll see. I mean, we'll see how good a shape he's kept in. We'll see if, you know, weight cutting without IVs is a big thing for a lot of these guys these days. So
yeah,
we'll see just how much that affects him coming back, and it'll be interesting to look at.
All right, but you know, pretty good fight to main event the Fox Sports 1 prelims. All right, next up we have a welterweight fight between Kyle Noak and Alex Monroe. Morono?
Oh, no. Morono? That's how
I'm going with
Morono.
This was supposed to be Kyle Noak fighting Kelvin Gastelum. However, Kelvin Gastelum continues to live up to the nickname of Mini Kane in more ways than one by suffering another injury. I would have picked Gastelum without too much hesitation against Noak. Noak's not a bad fighter, but he is far from, you know, truly elite. And Kelvin Gastelum, when he's on, is a very good fighter. Against a newcomer who I know nothing about, I'll go with Noak. He's coming off of that impressive win over Peter Sabata. I mean, Morono could just be someone we've never heard of as opposed to, you know, an actual nobody. But in the dark, I'll go with Noak to take this one. At women's strawweight, we have a fight between Justine Kish, who is making her UFC debut. She's 4-0, including wins over Randa Marcos and that's the only one I really recognize. Sorry, I thought I recognized another one. She'll be fighting Nina Ansaroff, who is coming off of a loss to Juliana Lima. I seem to recall thinking that was cluckied. Yeah, I scored that for Ansaroff. I thought Lima got way too much credit for holding on to top position and doing nothing. But, you know, Lima was a Brazilian fighting in Brazil. What are you going to do? Man, that was a long time ago. That was November of 2014, so over a year. We'll see if Ansaroff can rebound from that. I'll take Ansaroff in the dark, but again, women's strawweight, there's a lot of very good fighters who you've just never heard of. And Kish could be one of them. Drew Dober will be fighting Scott Holtzman. Dober was submitted by Efrain Escudero. That means he sucks. Scott Holtzman, undefeated, has a win in the UFC. Sure, because anyone bad enough to lose to Efrain Escudero sucks, because Efrain Escudero sucks. There's a Fight Pass card I want to talk about. So, Jeff, out of those prelims on Fox Sports 1, anything else striking your fancy?
Not really. Also, we'll see. I mean, I like Kyle Noakes, so we'll see if he's, you know, can continue the momentum. But then again, he's not really fighting a big name opponent either. But no one else really stands out there other than McDonald, Kanahara.
All right, main eventing the Fight Pass portion of the prelims is a legitimate, very relevant lightweight fight between Dustin Poirier and Joseph Duffy. Now, you all might be wondering, there's some questionable cards on the pay-per-view. There's a few no-names, including a guy who got submitted by Efrain Escudero fighting on the Fox Sports 1 prelims. Why are these two, both of whom have legitimate names, fighting on the Fight Pass portion of this card? Well, for those of you with memories, Joseph Duffy and Dustin Poirier were supposed to main event UFC Fight Night 76 from Dublin. That was the Dublin card this year in October. Duffy pulled out of the event 3 days before it went live because he was sparring without headgear and got a concussion. I already yelled about that whole thing. I'm not going to yell about it again. But that was supposed to be the main event for that card. UFC Fight Night 76 was also a Fight Pass exclusive event. Now, to make up for the fact that the scheduled main event of a Fight Pass card fell through at the last minute, the same pairing was kept together and is now back on Fight Pass. That's kind of the UFC's logic. They want to make it up to anyone who might have purchased the service just for that event or just for that fight. I find their logic to be acceptable in this particular instance. And I like this fight. I liked this fight beforehand. Dustin Poirier rejuvenated his career by stopping his weight cut. He's coming off of back-to-back finishes. He knocked out Carlos Diego Fajeyas, knocked out Yancy Medeiros. His only loss, in quite a while, in his last six fights, he's 5-1. The only loss is to Conor McGregor at featherweight, and, you know, that McGregor guy's pretty good. Joseph Duffy is, God, I hate referring to him this way, I really do, but he is the last guy to beat Conor McGregor. He's 2-0 in the UFC. He TKO'd Jake Lindsey. He submitted Yvonne George. His only loss was in October of 2011. He's got wins over Norman Park, a win over Norman Park, as well as Conor McGregor. I liked this fight before. I still like it. This is a pretty cracking lightweight fight. I really like Dustin Poirier, and I'm not sure how good Joseph Duffy is. Beating Conor McGregor, how long ago was that? 5 years ago, with a kind of a janky setup into an arm triangle on a less than experienced fighter is not. Again, it's not unheard of for guys who know what they're doing on the ground to catch guys who are still learning it. Dustin Poirier hits really hard, has improved his offensive technique. He's a very good grappler as well. Much as he likes brawling, grappling has kind of been where he's secured a lot of his wins in the UFC. I'm going with Poirier. I'm more comfortable with that, but Joseph Duffy is, you know, again, got a good record. He's not inexperienced. This is a pretty darn good fight. So I got Poirier, but Duffy winning wouldn't surprise me. And I'm really happy to have a fight on the Fight Pass portion of this card that I can actually look forward to and not be pleasantly surprised by necessarily.
I like this fight a lot. I think I understand. I guess I understand why it's on the Fight Pass portion, but I think maybe it should maybe be the FS1 main event. That being said, I'm going with Poirier here. I mean, Duffy has looked good in the UFC so far, but I mean, look who he's beaten. He's beaten Jake Lindsey, and Ivan George. And Poirier was a legitimate top five guy when he was fighting at featherweight. Now he's moved up, and he still looks good. He doesn't look like he's slowing down or he's lost a step. I mean, his striking and his striking defense have always been an issue for him, but he's improved in some of those areas. And I would say his grappling against Duffy's, I would say, is far superior, and I think he's going to be more of a threat in the grappling game with his takedowns. If he gets on top of Joseph Duffy, then Duffy would, even though, I mean, Duffy did get a submission in his last fight, but I think we still just don't know how good Duffy is yet. That Conor McGregor fight was a long time ago. He's not the same fighter then, and Conor McGregor isn't either. And, Conor McGregor's, he's an elite great fighter. I would not say he's a world-class grappler. And I would still, even though Poirier lost to McGregor, I would still put his grappling above McGregor's at this point. And I think if Poirier can utilize that and avoid Duffy's power, I think he wins this. He's got this in the bag.
All right, the other fight's on Fight Pass. Joe Soto is fighting Michinori Tanaka. Tanaka is 1-1 in the UFC. He defeated Roland Delorme. Lost to Kyung Ho Kong. Was that Cluckett or not?
It was Hunt
I would have to rewatch or read my coverage. I seem to recall scoring that for Tanaka, but there was one really like awkward round where personal bias as far as how you score things factors in. Tanaka also tested positive for some banned stimulants.
I think here's what you said for that fight for Kyung Ho Kong. You said it was a close fight. Third round could have gone either way. Heck of a fight. So
okay,
that was just one of those close, tough fights.
From
the sound of things.
I remember scoring it for Tanaka, but Kong winning was not at all wrong. That was actually a darn good fight,
now that I
remember it. Joe Soto, 0-2 in the UFC. Man, he needs a win. Losing to TJ Dillashaw on short notice, fine, that, again, that happens. Especially, 24 hours notice, you're fighting TJ Dillashaw, who, my opinion of him as a person aside, has proven to be a very, very good fighter. And then he got knocked out by Anthony Burchak, and that's more troubling.
And Dillashaw can prove it even more after he beats Dominic Cruz.
Yeah, you and I disagree about the outcome of that fight. Tune in, I can't remember if it's next week or the week after, when Jeff and I will preview Cruz versus Dillashaw too, so that'll be a fun one.
That'll be a fun one.
I'll take Soto on this one, but that could go either way. And kicking everything off, Edgar Garcia is fighting Sheldon Westcott. Garcia lost his UFC debut. Westcott, I think he's fought for the UFC maybe once. The name is familiar, but beyond that. Not knowing anything or not remembering Westcott. I'm going to flip a coin. Hang on. Actually, have a coin here.
Westcott is 0-2 in the UFC. Lost his UFC debut to Elias Theodoro, and then lost to Paweł Pawlak at UFC Fight Night 64. So he was a Fighter Nation's finalist from Canada.
Oh, Canada versus the UK. Excuse me, Canada versus Australia. Yeah, I remember that.
Right. And then he lost to Pavel Polak. So he's 0-2 versus Edgar Garcia.
I'll go with Garcia on that one. My corn said heads. That's how I went with that one. All right, Jeff. If you care too much about either Soto and Tanaka or Edgar and Garcia?
I mean, Poirier versus Duffy is a great fight. Soto, Tanaka, I'm mildly interested in. Other than that, not too much.
All right. And that will be UFC 195 kicking off 2016 with violence. Seriously, someone might die in that main event. They could subtitle this, "Someone's Going to Die." At the very least, there will be blood. There's a promise for that main event. Someone is going to bleed. Probably a lot. Jeff, any news that came out this last week that's really worth talking about here?
Quite a bit. Anderson Silva is coming back in 2 months from now. He will be fighting Michael Bisping in a dream middleweight super fight at UFC Fight Night 83. They will be fighting in London. This fight will be streamed exclusively on UFC Fight Pass. So they're bringing out Anderson Silva to fight Bisping in the main event of an England card. So it'll be five rounds in London, only on Fight Pass. And Bisping was originally scheduled to fight Gegard Mousasi. Mousasi now has a new opponent. It will be Talis Latis. So you got two pretty big middleweight fights for this Fight Pass card in London. So, you know, the Londoners can't really complain here. They get a huge main event, and they get a pretty sizable co-main event between two top 10 ranked middleweights as well.
Oh, man. Anderson Silva, how far you've fallen.
Well, what do you think? What do you think? Do you not like this fight, Robert? What's your feeling here?
I'm in a very weird spot when it comes to Anderson Silva. I miss how great he was. I mean, I know you can't be that great forever. It's just not possible. I just miss that. This fight is quite a few years too late. This is a battle for relevance.
Right.
But
look.
I mean,
Bisping is coming off a win. I mean, I think Bisping, he's won his last, what, one or two?
Let me see. Michael Bisping.
Bisping has won his last three beats. CB Dalloway and Latis, both by decision. Silva's had, you know, has had the suspension due to the drug test. I guess relevant, I mean, Bisping is still ranked right now, so he's ranked number 7.
But he's got a ranking based more on past accomplishments than I think current standing.
Okay, but he's on a 2-fight winning streak. Silva is Silva, so this fight will get some intrigue for that.
If Anderson Silva is anything like he used to be, he should be able to finish Michael Bisping. Now, we all know Silva's not what he used to be for whatever reason or variety of reasons. I still think Silva takes that. But, you know, trotting out maybe the greatest fighter of all time on a Fight Pass exclusive card tells you what the UFC wants Fight Pass to become for them. It's not just an addendum, you know. It's something they're putting some time and effort behind, so.
I'm happy for, you know, the London fans are going to be happy with this, though. So for them, this is good because I don't think they've had a card quite this big in a long time, you know, ever, because Fight Pass has sort of, you know, for the international cards, we haven't seen as big names on as this headlining a Fight Pass card in a while, you know?
No, it's been a while, especially someone with, again, the stature that Anderson Silva has.
At least in London, due to the nature of having UFC Fight Pass. So there's that, and I don't know. I guess I do like Silva in this fight, but I guess we'll see. I guess we'll see how much Silva has left in the tank here.
Yeah.
I'm hoping Silva does retire in his next couple fights, but you know, it's not my choice. We'll see. I like Silva, though, pretty much. Hopefully Silva has gotten all of his – hopefully he's 100% healed physically and he's put all the, you know, the drug testing issues behind him.
Hopefully he's learned not to accept mysterious blue vials from friends from Thailand.
I mean, I honestly, I think that's all nonsense, but I don't want to get into that.
Oh, of course it's nonsense. Ugh. But
Red took a fight on that card, too, so that's good.
Red Pickett's always good for a fight.
Yep.
Yeah, that'll be a pretty good card to bring to London.
In terms of news, I mean, that's really, I think, the biggest news that's come along. Just because, you know, everything's been slowing down lately because of the holidays. So, also, I mean, there was the news of UFC 193 doing about 1.1 million pay-per-view buys. I'm sure we'll probably hear about more about UFC 194 in the next few weeks, but if it was tracking even higher, it could maybe have done similar numbers to UFC 100. But I guess we'll see. So that's pretty interesting. Stephen Thompson is fighting Johnny Hendricks, so there's that. I don't know if we quite covered that, but Stephen Thompson is going to fight Johnny Hendricks at UFC 196. So big opportunity for Stephen Thompson there.
That's an interesting fight. You know, Johnny Hendricks may not have ever been knocked out, but, I mean, that's a pretty big mountain for Stephen Thompson to climb, but Wonderboy's proven he can climb mountains.
In his last fight, but Hendricks is a different type of wrestler. He's heavy-handed, knockout power in both hands, but he's not looked his best. He's not been at his best, and he's been struggling with the weight cut. He looks like he's been staying in shape recently. Hendricks is in transition right now. So sometimes that can be good for a fighter and can reinvigorate them, but that other times it can be a struggle for them because, you know, they're in transition and they haven't quite gotten into the groove of, you know, changing up the training camps, changing up training partners and sparring partners. That's sort of where Hendricks is right now. He had to sort of change everything because, you know, he failed to make weight against Tyron Woodley and he didn't even get that fight. So interesting intangible factors there. Thompson has been on a hell of a run. He's been looking great lately, but he's a karate guy. He's a striker. Hendricks is a wrestler. He's really good at grinding and taking the fight where he wants. So, interesting matchup at least, and I like the fight.
Yeah, that'll be an interesting one. I'll be looking forward to that one.
The fact that we have to endure Verdum versus Velasquez again for the heavyweight title, but at least it's happening.
I'm waiting for Kane to get injured again because you know it's going to happen.
At least it's or Verdum, because we've been waiting this long because of Verdum. So at least it's happening in less than 2 months. So, I mean, not a bad card, all things considered, except for the fact that I don't want to see Velasquez yet again. But I like Hendricks versus Thompson as a matchup a lot. I mean, we're going to find out how much Thompson has grown and how good he can be. If he can beat Hendricks, he's a contender, no question.
All right. We will be back next week to review UFC 195. Are they holding that? Ugh. All right. Looks like UFC Fight Night, the Dillashaw versus Cruz card, when TJ Dillashaw's going down.
When Dillashaw will destroy Dominic Cruz and cement his spot in history as one of the greatest pound-for-pound fighters of all time. You know what's happening, sir.
No, I've got Cruz all day long.
Okay.
But that's going to be
it's your God-given right to be wrong and make mistakes, Winfrey. It's okay.
But that event's going to be held on the 17th, which is a Sunday. So I'm going to make sure that is accurate.
That's a nice lineup right there. I mean, for FS1... That's like a huge lineup for FS1. You have a legit title fight. You have a potential title eliminator. And then you have, I mean, you know, Brown versus Mitrone. I mean, two big, you know, heavyweights with knockout power. So hopefully we'll get a finish there. But nice lineup there, at least.
No, it's actually a darn good card for Fox Sports 1.
I'm just looking forward to the next day when I'll be dining on your tears. I'll be drinking your tears like a nice fine wine of the devastating loss of Dominic Cruz.
Yeah, I really don't think that's happening.
Yeah.
But anyway, what that means is the 17th, we will not have a show, so we will be on the 24th. Okay. At any rate, we'll be back next week on the 3rd to review UFC 195. Then the week after, the 10th, to preview the Dillashaw versus Cruz card. So until then, that's going to go ahead and wrap us up for this evening. So, Jeff, what do you got to plug?
All right. Check out my reviews of The Revenant, Concussion, Star Wars The Force Awakens, all in the Movie Zone. Check out my column from last week on Conor McGregor. My thoughts on why I think the Frankie Edgar title fight is probably the best move for him right now. Granted, as long as he's still okay with making weight, I know there are factors there. But if he can't make the weight anymore, I believe Conor should just go ahead and relinquish the title and take, you know, the title fight against Dos Anjos. Because if he can't make the weight, then he can't be the featherweight champion. It's that simple. And he can't continue to hold the belt and be a dual champion. Besides that, check out my interview with Rachel Taylor of Jessica Jones, new Marvel Netflix series that's also in movies and TV. And let's see. I think that's all the movie reviews I have lined up for a while, just because we're – since we are at the end of December, we're sort of in Oscar season, but then once we hit January, we're sort of in dumping ground season. So that's sort of
fine, brother.
Yeah, so that's sort of it. Just for example, I got invited to Point Break from Warner Brothers, and they canceled those media screenings at the last minute because it's the Point Break remake. They knew. Ugh. I mean, I think they knew they had a turkey there, so
who
I was going to review
was
Point
a good
Break.
Idea. I mean, really,
it's Hollywood, man. What can you do? So I was going to do the Point Break remake, and then they got canceled right out from under me. So next year it'll definitely be a big year for movies because we have another new Star Wars movie next year coming out. We have Civil War, Batman versus Superman. Think about that. Batman versus Superman is coming out in less than 3 months. So that's pretty amazing. The first ever movie to feature both Batman and Superman in the same film. So it'll be an interesting 2016. So happy new year to you, Winfrey. Happy new year to the listeners. It's been great.
All right. I'll see you next year, Jeff. Yeah, I can say it because next time will be 2016.
Awesome.
All right. As for me, what I've done recently, I hosted participated in a review of Star Wars The Force Awakens with Mark Radulich, Andrew Graham, and Benjamin J. Cologne. All three fine gentlemen with, you know, valuable insight. A good time had by all, and it prevented Mark and I from yelling at each other over the minutiae of the film, which is what that would have deteriorated into. Coming up this Wednesday, Mark Radulich and I will be reviewing The Big Short. It was supposed to be Quentin Tarantino's Hateful Eight, but that doesn't hit wide release until a little later in January. So we're reviewing The Big Short because I can't convince Mark to see The Revenant. I'm going to see it anyway because I want to. All right. Again, Jeff and I will be back next year. Gone over all of that. Keep an eye out in the MMA zone. Again, our year-end awards are going to be coming up soon, and I kind of want to do a 2015 retrospective piece. You know, I don't have anything to cover In the immediate, I mean, I've got the next one, but you know, I've had a couple of weeks where I haven't had to do anything too intensive. So, you know, the writing urge is kind of creeping its way back up. So I'd like to try and get that done. So no promises, but it might be there. All right. That's it. That's everything for us. That's all for 2016. So to everyone, that's all for 2015. To everyone out there, have a safe and a happy new year. I will see you all again next Sunday, same time, same place. Until then, please continue to be well, be safe, and behave.